Okay, picture this. Late 60s, early 70s, the Vietnam War. But we're talking about something else, something deeper, a classified mission, codenamed Operation Tailwind.
Yeah, deep inside Laos. And this wasn't your average mission.
Right. So today we're doing a deep dive, really getting into the details based on some amazing firsthand accounts.
Exactly. We're looking at episode 64 from the Military Tales YouTube channel, Operation Tailwind, a heroic deep dive into Laos. It really unpacks the, the sheer complexity and the danger.
Forget the dry history books. We want the feel of it, right?
Yeah.
The comms problems, coordinating air support on a knife edge, the intensity, all from the people who are there.
And listening to them, like in that episode 64, the first thing that jumps out is just how audacious Tailwind was.
Audacious how?
Well, it was the deepest penetration into Laos,
Ever.
significantly further than where SOG teams usually operated.
Okay, so SOG studies an observation group, right? We usually think small teams sneaking around.
Yeah, typically 9, maybe 11 guys, very small footprint.
But Tailwind wasn't like that.
Not at all. Episode 64 makes this really clear. It was a company-sized hatchet force. We're talking about 133 men.
Whoa, 133 deep in Laos. That's a whole different level of risk and complexity.
Totally different ballgame. Logistics, command, control. Everything gets harder, and the insertion itself tells a story.
How so? Normally they'd want a cold insert, right? Getting quiet.
That's the ideal, yeah. Land somewhere remote, no enemy contact. But Tailwind. It went hot almost immediately. Became a prairie fire emergency right off the bat.
Prairie fire. Okay, episode 64 mentions that term. Sounds bad. What does that actually mean in practice?
It means top priority for air support. Everything gets diverted to help the team on the ground, second only maybe to rescuing downed pilots in North Vietnam or Laos. It signifies a major emergency, basically.
So they needed that support from the very beginning. What kind of aircraft were they using for the insertion?
Initially, they tried with H-34 King Bees, older helicopters. Later, Hueys came in. They had Cobra gunships, call sign Panthers, and the A-1 Sky Raiders, the Ace of Spades, for air cover.
But it didn't go smoothly, did it? The first day was a bust.
Yeah, a near disaster, according to the accounts in episode 64. The Marine helicopter pilots, well, they were used to flying tactics from Vietnam.
Which didn't work in Laos.
Right. In Nam, flying above 1,500 feet AGL, above ground level, was often safer from small arms. But in the deep gorges of Laos, with heavy anti-aircraft artillery, AAA positioned on high ground.
Flying that high made them easy targets for the bigger guns.
Exactly. Sitting ducks, staying below 1,500 feet, which they tried, put them right in the kill zone for the AAA in those specific areas. It apparently led to some pretty tense disagreements.
Oh, between who?
Episode 64 talks about friction between a Marine colonel and the younger Air Force FACs, the forward air controllers, call sign Cubby. The Cubbies knew the Laotian environment better, knew the AAA threat was different.
A colonel getting pushed back from lieutenants or young captains. I bet that went down well.
Probably not. But the result was they took heavy fire, couldn't insert anyone, and had to turn back day one. Mission failed.
Wow. And day two.
Day two, they managed to get some guys in using Marine heavy lift choppers and Cobras, but still under fire. They took hits, had wounded personnel on the helicopters during the insertion. Just getting boots on the ground was a battle.
Okay, so they're in, it's a prairie fire, chaos. How do you even manage air support in that situation? That's where the FACs come in, right? The cubbies?
Absolutely critical.
Okay.
Episode 64 really drives this home. The FAC is the eyes in the sky, part Indian scout, finding targets, and part orchestra leader, coordinating all the different aircraft.
Orchestra leader, I like that. But episode 64 mentioned a big communication problem, different radios.
Yeah, huge headache. The ground team's on FM Fox mic, helicopter pilots are on VHF, fighter pilots are on UHF.
So they can't talk directly to each other.
Nope. It all had to go through the FAC. He was the clearinghouse. Every bomb, every strafing run had to be cleared by the FAC first. He's relaying info, translating requests, making sure friendlies are safe.
That's immense pressure. And how close were these strikes getting? Episode 64 mentioned it was
Very
dangerously close.
terrifyingly close, especially with the A1 Sky Raiders. Those props could get really precise. The FAC sometimes brought them in as close as 10 or 15 meters from the friendly troops.
10 meters, that's practically on top of them.
It required incredible skill from the A1 pilots and absolute confidence from the FAC. Fast jets, like F-100s, needed a bigger safety margin, minimum 100 meters. But the A-1s, yeah, dangerously close.
Unbelievable. And There was someone else in the FAC plane sometimes. A 10, episode 64, talked about that.
Yes, the 10. Usually a very experienced Special Forces NCO or officer, the team leader type. They'd ride in the right seat of the O2 FAC plane.
What was their role up there?
They were invaluable. They could talk directly to the ground team on the FM radio, understand the tactical situation from their perspective, give advice to the often younger FAC pilot, help with map reading, navigation. Basically, the ground commander's direct link in the cockpit. A vital connection, as episode 64 stresses.
Makes sense. Having that ground perspective right there. Now, about the FAC plane itself, episode 64 mentioned the O2, the Oscar Deuce, and the OV-10 Bronco. What was the difference?
So around 69-70, the O2 was the main ride for these Prairie Fire FACs. It was basically a modified Cessna 337 Skymaster. They ripped out the back seats for more radio gear.
Okay, a modified civilian plane. What were its pros and cons?
The big pro, as highlighted in the interview, was that side-by-side seating. The 10 was right next to the pilot. They could point at maps, use hand signals, quick verbal stuff without clogging the radio. Super efficient in a crisis.
Ah, I see. Direct communication.
Exactly. But the big drawback was visibility. The pilot's in the left seat, so looking down and right was difficult. You're kind of craning your neck, makes it harder to spot ground fire or keep targets in sight during turns.
Okay, so what about the OV-10? It was designed for this role, right?
Yeah, the Bronco was purpose-built. Tandem seating pilot in front, observer FAC well back under a big bubble canopy. Much better visibility, almost straight down. More power, faster, could even carry rockets or guns, though FACs rarely use them effectively in that role, apparently.
Sounds better then.
In some ways, yes. Better performance, better view. But the communication thing, episode 64 points out talking to the 10 over the intercom in the back, wasn't as fluid as having them right beside you in the O2. Passing maps back and forth, that immediate interaction. It was different. So, trade-offs.
Interesting. Better plane, maybe, but maybe less effective teamwork in the cockpit for that specific SOG support role.
That's kind of the takeaway from the account, yeah.
So back to the Prairie Fire. Intense fighting. Episode 64 must have some stories about the air support and close calls.
Oh, yeah. Once that Prairie Fire call went out, the air support was overwhelming. A-7s, gunships like the AC-130 maybe, F-100s. Though they were pushing their range limits, even Marine OV-10 sometimes acted as attack aircraft.
They threw everything at it.
Pretty much. Episode 64 recounts this incredible incident with an H-53 extraction helicopter. Took heavy hits, lost an engine.
Oh, wow.
And the pilot had to auto-rotate, basically glide it down without power into a steep canyon. Landed it safely, somehow. Gene McCarley's, the Hatchet Force commander, was actually on that chopper.
Auto-rotating an H-53 into a canyon. That pilot deserves a medal.
Seriously skilled flying under extreme pressure. And the FACs themselves were stretched thin. The interviewee in episode 64 talks about hitting bingo fuel during the operation.
Bingo fuel, meaning?
Barely enough fuel to get back to base. Running on fumes, they had to use fuel-saving tricks, fly slower, lean the engines, just to stay airborne and keep supporting the guys on the ground because the fight was going on for so long.
Constant pressure. And what about supplies? The guys on the ground must have been running low on ammo. Did they try a resupply?
They did, and it's another key story from episode 64. The ground team was desperate for ammo. So they rigged up an OV-10, piloted by George Bauer with the squadron CO, Colonel Warner McGraw, in the back.
Okay, using the OV-10 for cargo. How?
Improvised. They stuffed supplies, claymores, gas masks, hopefully ammo into A3 bags, those big canvas gear bags. The plan was to toss them out the back compartment with small cargo chutes attached.
Sounds risky. Did it work?
Disaster.
Yeah.
Complete disaster. As episode 64 tells it, the chutes didn't open. Probably moldy or mildewed from the jungle humidity.
Oh, no.
Yeah, the bundles just plummeted down and scattered all over a hillside that was, and I quote the interviewee, alive with muzzle flashes.
So they basically delivered supplies right to the enemy, or at least right into the middle of the firefight.
Pretty much. Instead of helping, it created a new hazard.
Yeah.
The FAC then had to divert aircraft to suppress the enemy fire on that hillside where the supplies had landed. Just one problem after another.
Man, the challenges just kept piling up. Episode 64 also gets into flying at night, doesn't it? Over the Ho Chi Minh Trail.
Yeah, that's another layer of danger. The interviewee talks about the initial terror of seeing anti-aircraft fire at night, tracer rounds zipping past, thinking, you know, how can anyone survive this long term?
I can't even imagine.
But then, this grim desensitization sets in. You learn to recognize the different types of fire just by the tracers, AK-47, .50 cal, 37mm cannon. You learn to judge the trajectory, whether you need to jink or if it's going wide. Constant, head on a swivel, vigilance.
learning under fire, literally, in the dark. Amidst all this, episode 64 really praises the Special Forces guys on the ground, the SOG operators.
Absolutely. Calls them the elite of the elite. Really high morale, incredibly disciplined. The interviewees stressed there was basically no drug use among them, which was apparently becoming an issue elsewhere. They were just focused professionals under unbelievable strain.
And SOG stood for Studies and Observation Group, right? What kinds of things did they do besides missions like Tailwind?
All sorts of clandestine stuff. Reconnaissance, wiretaps on enemy communication lines, prisoner snatches, directing airstrikes, and even some unconventional warfare like planting dummy ammo in enemy caches.
Dummy ammo. To mess with them.
Yeah, imagine the enemy finding a case of ammo that looks good but won't fire. So it's confusion, damages weapons, maybe. Episode 64 mentions there was a code name for it, but the interviewee couldn't remember it.
Clever stuff. And there was another story, almost unbelievable, about them overrunning an enemy camp and making a phone call.
Yeah, sounds like something out of a war movie, right?
Yeah.
But it speaks to their boldness, that kind of psychological edge they tried to maintain. Episode 64 also mentions the FAC pilot's first prairie fire mission. His 1-0 was named Durango. Just hearing the name gave him confidence because these guys had such a reputation.
Guys you definitely wanted on your side.
For sure. Known for incredible toughness. Many had been wounded multiple times, but kept going back.
And it wasn't just Americans down there, right? Episode 64 mentioned the indigenous troops.
Right, the Montagnards, or Yards as they call them. The Hatchet Force was maybe 30-odd Americans, but the rest, the majority, were these Montagnard fighters.
Yeah.
Described as fearsome little fighters, incredibly brave, great morale, absolutely vital to the whole operation.
A truly combined force. The extraction must have been just as hairy as the insertion. Episode 64 touches on that.
It does. The interviewee, the FAC pilot, shares this really powerful memory. A hot extraction, helicopters taking fire, getting everyone counted, and one of the Montagnard soldiers is missing.
Oh, man, what did they do?
Fuel was critical, remember. Bingo fuel. But the FAC made the call to go back. Against the odds, flying low, searching, he spotted the guy's signal panel on the ground, coordinated the rescue birds back in, and they got him out.
Wow. Risking running out of fuel to save one guy.
Yeah. The pilot talks about the immense satisfaction, the relief of saving that life. A small victory, maybe, but hugely significant, personally.
Definitely. Episode 64 then adds a darker note about what happened to the Montagnards later.
Yeah. It's a tragic postscript. After the U.S. left, the Montagnards who fought alongside them faced brutal reprisals from the victorious North Vietnamese. Persecution, slaughter. A really grim outcome for America's allies there.
A tough reality. And the episode also mentioned that these kinds of insertions got harder over time. The enemy adapted.
Definitely. The NVA got smarter about likely landing zones, maybe had better intelligence, possibly leaks. Undetected insertions became much more difficult.
So how did they even pick LZs?
Episode 64 describes the recon process, calling it playing the ball game. Flying over potential areas, trying to assess enemy presence without giving too much away. They also used deception.
Like what?
Dummy insertions. Fake a landing in one spot to draw attention while the real team goes in somewhere else. Anything to confuse the enemy.
Constant cat and mouse. Episode 64 also throws in some anecdotes, right, about a pilot named Cowboy.
And silent insertions.
Yeah, some lighter moments amidst the tension. Cowboy was apparently a well-liked, skilled pilot. And the H-34 King Bees could apparently do a silent insertion by auto-rotating part of the way in, reducing noise. Ingenious stuff.
Auto-rotation again. It's like a key skill. And they had countermeasures for tracking dogs, too. CS powder.
Yes, CS gas powder. Tear gas, basically. Each guy might carry a small pouch. If they thought dogs were on their trail, they'd release it. Disrupts the dog's sense of smell. Buys the team time to escape. Important clarification in episode 64. It was CS, not sarin nerve gas, like some later false reports claimed.
Exactly. CS is debilitating, burning eyes, nose, throat, uncontrollable sneezing, coughing, but it's tear gas, not a deadly nerve agent. Still nasty stuff if you didn't have a mask and effective against the dogs.
Desperate times, desperate measures. So wrapping up, the Military Tales episode ends with the FAC pilot reflecting on his experience.
Yeah, on that incredibly steep learning curve, going from initial fear and feeling overwhelmed to developing that intense situational awareness. And the sheer authority they had, young lieutenants directing colonels and F-4s, making life or death decisions constantly, huge responsibility.
An immense weight on young shoulders. And then that final sobering touch, the poem.
Right. An excerpt from a poem or song, Dear Ma'am, Your Son is Dead. Just a stark, brutal reminder of the human cost, the reality behind the call signs and the mission codes.
Hits hard. This whole deep dive into episode 64, it really paints a picture of Operation Tailwind that you don't get from standard histories, the sheer raw intensity of it.
Absolutely. You get a sense of the vital role of the FACs, the incredible skill of the pilots, the bravery of the SOG teams and the montagnards on the ground, and those communication and coordination challenges. Just immense.
It makes you think about all the other stories, the classified operations like Tailwind that are still out there, you know, offering these vital human perspectives on the war.
Definitely. Yeah. And if this discussion has piqued your interest, seriously, go watch the full episode 64 on Military Tales. We've only scratched the surface. There's so much more detail and nuance in the full firsthand account. It's well worth your time.